Do I stand up here or down here? Does anyone mind? I'll go up for the moment, so at least there's somewhere I can put my stuff down. Thank you. Morning. Good to be with you. Peace be with you, friend. It is good to be with you. I've been looking at some of the stuff you're doing in the community, doing my research before coming today. And you folks have got an incredible legacy, haven't you, in this community. What you're doing is stunning. And I've been speaking in churches for probably about 13, 14 years. And I used to go and visit churches with my dad when I was a kid. And every time I or my dad would start, we'd always talk about what a privilege it is to come and speak in a particular church. And some of those times it was slightly through gritted teeth, because it wasn't always as much of a privilege as I made out. It's a genuine privilege to be with you this morning. I spoke to John earlier in the week, told me he'd been to Turkey, which is all right for some, isn't it? But it sounds like, having seen some of that this morning, sounds like it was very well deserved. John was just speaking and just sharing something of the vision for the church, and just a sense that what John is doing is incredible. And what an incredible leader to have, that you just see Jesus in the man, don't you? And I feel privileged to be there just because he's been here, and some of the things he said this morning have already kind of brought me to tears. Bless you, and thank you for that. I'm absolutely delighted because one of my good friends, Lee, is coming to be with you. Lee and I served at Youth for Christ. I was Lee's boss for some years. He's trouble, you know, John. I got that. No, I won't tell you. Move on quickly. I'm delighted that Lee can come and just be mentored by you, because I think he's got a lot to give, but he's got a lot he can soak up as well. So that's incredible. I want to talk very briefly about safe families. I get paid to do that, so it'd be wrong not to. I'll do that. And then just encourage you and invite you to be part of Safe Families with us. I know some of you have already started that journey with us, and there's already some incredible stories coming out of that. I'll talk about Safe Families, those who haven't heard of us before. I invite you to be part of that, to take some of the opportunity that presents to us as people of faith. But then I've got something from God for you. It's for the mums, of course, because it's Mother's Day. But I think it's something for all of us as individually, but corporately as well as a church. So let me do that in a moment. Safe families to start. Some months ago, I met a little girl called Zoe. Zoe was living with her adoptive parents. And I met Zoe and her adoptive mum. Zoe was about 3 or 4 years old, not 100% sure. But she was a little girl who had been born into a really loving family. Everything was going well for that family, but they were socially isolated. They were poor. They weren't well educated. And when Dad lost his job, that story very quickly turned from normal caring life into something of a crisis that any of us might face. But crisis then turned very quickly into chaos. And for Zoe, chaos turned into care. And I met Zoe, and she was missing her mum, and I read some of the backstory. It was one of the privileges of the role I do to find out some of these stories. And the story was Zoe was missing her mum, and mum and dad were missing Zoe. They never planned for Zoe to go into care. The adoptive mum knew that she could love Zoe with all her heart, but it would never be the same as the real family. It was just a story that wasn't great, and the outcome might be brilliant in the future, but at that point, it just wasn't great. Zoe's mum said something to me that I've heard lots of social workers say as well. They said, if only somebody could have been there for them at the point of crisis. If only somebody could have been there for them at the point of crisis. And I just start to grieve, and I start to well up. Not only for Zoe and her parents and for this beautiful mum who's took her on into their family, I'm grieving for them, but you know what I'm really grieving about? I'm grieving because I know, because I've been preaching in these places for 14 years, that there is somewhere, there are people who are called to be there for them at the point of crisis. Friends, if the local church isn't the ideal place to care for a family in crisis, I don't know what is. And as I'm hearing them saying, if only they could have been there, as I'm hearing these social workers, if only they could have been there for somebody for them, I'm thinking there is people there for them, and it's the local church. It was in that context that Safe Families came. My journey in starts about 12 months ago. And knowing some of these stories from my time with Youth for Christ, with Lee, and knowing some of the heartbreaking, heart-rending stories of these families who reach this crisis point, And there was this simple idea that would never cost the church a penny, that was paid for by the local authorities, that would allow churches to just get on with the business of loving those in their communities. You see, there's some very valid fears around this stuff. It's too expensive to support families in the way that we'd need to. It's too expensive in time, it's too expensive in money, it's potentially too dangerous. And there's Safe Family saying, you know what, we'll cover all the costs, we'll make sure it's safe, we'll make sure it's very quick and efficient, and all the stuff behind the scenes is done. And all the churches need to do is accept the help if they want it, because it fits alongside what they're doing anyway. So essentially what Safe Families do, I won't labour the point because I know you've heard some of this before, but we train people, and some members already have been through the training and are already actively supporting families, and we're grateful to you and thank you for that. Some great stories. We support volunteers in local churches to get alongside a mum or a dad and just befriend them and support them. Some of those folks might be able to provide a short stay accommodation for children. If you can host an African child in your home for a couple of nights, you can host a kid from Old Roan for a couple of nights. And that's all we ask. Please, would you open up your home and support a child in your home? Probably for a couple of nights to a couple of weeks in the whole of a year. So if there's a spare room, that might be something you would consider. Respite care for the parents, essentially, is what it is. You just love on the kids and you might take them out for the day, and it might be the only chance they ever get to go out for the day. So short stay accommodation for children. The other thing is we train people to provide befriending support. You might be able to get alongside a young mum or a young dad or the family and just meet them once a week, just for a couple of hours, and just invest in them, speak well into their lives. Joe, my wife, and our kids here, you've seen my kids are live wires. You've seen some of that playing out today. And at times, Joe's just like, I've just had enough. I just need to go and escape all this kind of thing. So even Joe just going and meeting with their friend for a coffee, is Joe tells me it's brilliant because I'm useless at it and I don't listen to what she says, so she tells me. But imagine you're isolated and you had no one to go and have a coffee with. Well, we can be those people, can't we? And we can pray into their lives and invest in them and bring something of the kingdom into their lives. Many of the people who are part of that end up starting a faith journey of their own, and there's some incredible stories of that happening. Short stay accommodation, befriending support, and then finally resource friends who sit on a database, and when we find a need because it's been identified by the local authority, there's kids within a mile of here. I can promise you it's true because it's obvious. There are kids within a mile of here probably who are sleeping on a floor tonight with no carpet because they've got no bed. And once the local authority identify that too, as we're able to put that out onto a database and say, hey, is there anybody within about 5 or 6 miles of this place who could go and get the spare bed they've got out the loft and take it to this family and let them have it so the kids can sleep on a bed? And we've got loads and loads of stories of this happening. Let's say families in a nutshell. I want to stick around at the end and talk some more about it with anybody who's interested. It's incredibly simple and yet hugely effective. Up in the northeast where we started 2 years ago, we had somewhere in the region of 200 referrals. 60 to 80% per year of those referrals were successful, which meant that those children didn't go into care as a result of folks like you supporting and blessing them. That's what the power of the church in action, isn't it? And the government are stunned by the results. Nobody can match them, and they can't work out why. Ian Duncan Smith said to Sir Peter Vardy, who founded us, this is brilliant, but can't anybody else do it? Sir Peter said, well, you ask the golf club if you wanted. You could ask the yacht club. He said, you could even ask the Tiddlywink club, would you think it would work? And Ian Duncan Smith said, I don't know why it works, but it works. It works because the Holy Spirit is vibrant in people of faith, and it makes an impact on people's lives. I think this is one of the greatest opportunities the church has had in years. Let me say it and then retract it. Shame on churches if they don't take hold of the opportunity. I'll throw that out there to you. Hey, there's me getting on my high horse. You're already involved with the church and thank you for it. Safe Families, I'll speak to you at the end about it if you're interested in that. Let me shift emphasis a little. I was watching, I think there's something of God in this for you folks today, as I say, individually but corporately. I was watching a program in the last week or so about identity theft. Anyone ever had their identity stolen? Thank goodness for that. Have you really? I'd be interested to talk about it. This program was fascinating. And what they were describing is this process that these criminals, often cyber online criminals, do. I'm not belittling this at all. If you've been through it, it must be very difficult to deal with. But essentially, they steal somebody's identity, and then often to get money out of that process. And they were talking about the different things that somebody might steal, and in doing so, steal identity. And they talked about maybe stealing a passport. There's mine. I won't show you the photo, but there it is. A slightly thing there. Steal a passport. And that's somebody's identity stolen. Or steal a driving license with a photo ID in it. There's mine there. Or maybe even steal a recent utility bill. Or maybe a bank statement. And apparently if they steal these things, they've stolen your identity. And I was thinking about it. I was thinking, somebody could come today and take every one of those things. And yet I don't think for a minute they would have actually stolen who I am. That's not my identity. Those documents aren't me. And I was thinking, how much of me would somebody have to take? How much of my life, how much of my person would somebody have to take before they truly stolen my identity? My old nan, who passed away some years ago, suffered with dementia in the last days of her life. And that's probably the closest I've ever seen to somebody having their identity stolen. She had no clue what was going on, and it was heartbreaking to see. And yet just before she died, there were glimpses, even in that dying, frail old lady, glimpses that actually she was still exactly who she was, and she remembered us in those last days, and she remembered their Father in heaven. And it was a beautiful moment. Her identity hadn't been stolen, even if we thought it had. Where does our identity lie? Where does our identity lie? Anyone remember that song when you were a kid, If I Were a Crocodile? Yeah. I was thinking about singing it and thought, that's such a bad idea. What was the chorus? And the last little bit of it, it said, and I just want to thank you. Was it Lord or Father? I just want to thank you, Father, for making me, me. The song's in our heads, isn't it? I can see people singing it. I just want to thank you, Father, for making me, me. But what am I? What makes me, me? What is it that's me? What's at the heart of me? And this is where I want to go today, because I want to just give some little stories, I think, which help us identify what makes us us. The reason it fits, I think, with Mother's Day, I was speaking to Joe about this even in the last week. It can be hard, can't it, being a parent? Let's put it into parenthood. It can be hard, can't it? Joe tells me the other day, I hope you don't mind me saying, Joe, essentially that she feels at times her whole identity is in the kids. My whole values, my whole vision, my whole life, my whole world is these three little boys who are incredible, and we love them to bits, but they're a flipping nuisance at times. Jacob's listening, he knows. He's on his pad, but he can hear me, can't you, Jake? Yeah. These three little lovable bundles of pure joy at times are the most infuriating little things I've ever met in all my life, and Joe bears the brunt of it. Joe bears the brunt of it. Sometimes Joe says, my whole life it's just around my kids. If you're a mum today, I just ask you, where do you place your value? I've done my own work, I told you. I read this in preparation for today. I've never done a Mother's Day talk before. I was a little bit nervous. Here we are, The 60-Minute Mother by Rob Parsons. Some of you have read this. Hey, it's not my book. I didn't write it. The 60-Minute Mother by Rob Parsons. Being a mother is hard. Sometimes I don't like my kids. I think this is his wife writing this bit. It says, careful with my boys hear this now, but it says, sometimes I wish I hadn't even had my kids. There's a quote, I won't tell you it's from, because this person has been a recent disgrace, actually, so I won't tell you, but it says this. This is him writing this quote. I guess the real reason my wife and I had children is the same reason that Napoleon invaded Russia. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Since then, however, I've had my doubts, primarily about my intelligence. And then a little bit more serious, it goes on to say this. One mother put it like this. My life took on the feeling of a monotonous routine. made even more difficult by the baby's bouts of occasional colic. Occasional, I say, they seem to occur every night between 11 and 3 in the morning. One long night as I paced the floor trying to scream my crying baby, uncontrollable tears began to flow down my face. I was slowly hit with the realization that the fun and games were ended and we weren't playing house anymore. The reality hit me with a stunning blow. It says it can be so hard coming to terms with all this. Society tells us that parenthood is the ultimate privilege. But why then do parents feel so much of what appears to be sheer misery? Jo's had enough, she's walking out. The answer, and listen to this carefully, the answer is not that we are failures, simply that we are seeing the effect of complete responsibility for the life of another person over whom we have no final control and who seems only intermittently either to want our involvement in their lives or be in the least bit grateful for it. Well, some powerful words. I want to ask mothers, but wider than that as well, people, not just parents, not just mums, but us all, where do you place your identity this morning? What makes you you? And where do you find your worth and value? Because I think having read some of these books about identity and about who we are, it's often where we place our value that defines who we are. I've recently read a book that was written in 1934 by Dale Carnegie. Anyone know of it? How to Win Friends and Influence People. In it, he describes the fact that most people find their worth in their own self-importance. And if you feel important, you feel worthy, and then you feel like you've got an identity. Friends, your identity isn't in your self-importance. Let me declare that to you today and start to describe to you where I think it is. Two stories which help us consider our identity and worth. John, what time do I need to finish? Thanks, it's been good to be with you. Bless you if you'll pray for me as I leave. I'm going for a few more, if that's all right. Two little girls go missing in the grounds of an extensive forest in Scotland. They've been missing for so long that the police have been called. Parents are scared stiff. These girls are nowhere to be found. It's a massive, massive national forest. No one knows where they are. The parents are panicking, and as the sun starts to set, it starts to get cold and rainy. These two girls realise that they are lost. And so they begin to try and find home and struggle. After some hours of searching, they happen upon a cottage. And with some fear and intrepidation, they knock on the door, and a kindly old lady opens the door. And as soon as she opens the door, she recognises these two little girls. She welcomes us in, she makes them tea, warms them by the fire, gives them cake. And then she starts a conversation with them, and as the conversation progresses, she starts to think, do you know, I really know who these girls are. Eventually she brooks up the courage and says, girls, don't I know you? Aren't you somebody? Aren't you somebody, she says. The little girls say, we are nobody, but our daddy is the king. And little Elizabeth and Margaret have been missing for ages. And we prayed for our queen this morning, and that's whose story it is. She went missing in the grounds of Balmoral up in Scotland and couldn't be found. We are nobody, but our daddy is the king. Isn't that incredible? Friends, we are nobody, but our daddy is the king. Carnegie says most people are impressed by their own self-importance, and yet in the kingdom, those values are completely turned upon their head. In the kingdom, nobody's become somebody's because our daddy is the king. We sang befriended by the king this morning. Friends, it's deeper than that. It's not just befriended. It's adopted, but more than that even as well, it's fathered. Fathered by the king of all creation. And if that doesn't begin to start describing your worth and your significance in a community, then I don't know what else is, because the minute we start to grasp the fact that our father's the king, for what that really means, we start to grasp that actually we're royal. We're royal. Ladies, you're princesses. You beautiful, royal princesses. Guys, you're princes. Apologies, you're princes. You are the royal priests of old Rome and beyond. And that means something. And we laugh because it sounds funny, but grasp how important that is to you as individuals. The authority that gives you is incredible. The significance of your life is incredible. And God declares this, it's in Peter. It's 1 Peter 2:19. You are a royal priesthood, a chosen people. By implication, you are royal priests and you are a chosen person. Think about what a royal priest could do. It's a passage from the olden days. Melchizedek was one of the first royal priests. Jesus quotes him. What he got to do was two things. Firstly, it was only the priests who got to go into the presence of God. You are priests and you get to be in the presence of God. Incredible. What an opportunity that we so often miss. You're priests, but you're royal as well. And royalty meant that they had authority to make decisions, to define the destiny of the places where they lived and worked. Royal priests, my friends, that's where your value is placed. And for whatever you are and whatever you do, that's a declaration that God makes over you. You are royal priests. Let me read another quick story for you. This is from the KJV, if you've got it. Any fans of the KJV, the kids jolly version? There it is. I thought that was funnier than when it was in my mind, but clearly not. I'll make a little note at the end. Don't try that one again. Nobody laughed. Let me read this to you. Page 118. Excuse me a moment. Should I put a little bookmark in this? There it is. Esther and the King. Esther twirled her dress in a perfect circle. I don't normally read from this version, by the way. I thought it was because it was Mother's Day. It's not my preferred version, I have to say. Esther... If you want to read it properly, NIV, Esther 2-10. Esther twirled her dress in a perfect circle and smiled at the king. Of all the women in the beauty contest, the king liked Esther the best. So Esther became the queen. Esther lived in a royal palace and had many servants and attendants to take care of her. She kept in close touch with her beloved, trusted cousin, Mordecai. One day Esther's friends delivered a message from Mordecai. They had worried looks upon their faces. What's wrong? Esther said. They looked into her eyes. Mordecai wants you to know that there is trouble ahead. Tell me more, she said. There is a plot from the palace to kill all the Jews. Esther gasped. How could this be? This was terrible news, not only for the Jewish people, but also for the queen. She was Jewish too. But no one in the palace knew that. Or had somebody found out? Esther had to take action, but it was against the rules for her to go directly to the king for her requests. Mordecai encouraged her to speak to the king anyway. Perhaps you were made queen for such a time as this, he said. Even though she could get into a lot of trouble, Esther risked going before the king. Oh, please, my dear king, she said, please do not kill the Jews, for I am a Jew, and if you kill them, you must also kill me. At first, the king was confused. He didn't realize that he'd been tricked. Someone has tricked me, he shouted. And when the king found out who it was, he got rid of him. The king appointed Mordecai to his new advisor, and though Esther and Mordecai, and through Esther and Mordecai, the Jewish people were saved. So that little line, Esther had to take action, but it was against the rules to go directly to the king. Mordecai encouraged her to speak to the king anyway, saying, perhaps you were made queen for such a time as this. I believe with all my heart that this church has been placed in this time, in this place, for such a time as this. Corporately, that's true, but it's true for every single individual in this church as well. You are here for such a time as this. No accidents, no mistakes, purpose and design. You're royal priests. Your Father is the King of all creation. And he has placed you in this geography, in this chronology, at this time, with the relationships that you've got, to do something that only you can do. Do you know you're the best person in the world to do what you've been called to do? Nobody could ever do it better. Isn't that incredible? It sounds so trite, doesn't it? It sounds so daft, and yet it's the truth. There is nobody better placed to do what you've called to do than you. And whatever that may be, and I don't know it, maybe some of you are on that journey of finding that out. Maybe some of you have still need to see what that is. But I think God has a purpose for you, and you were created for such a time as this. Incredible to see that little baby. I didn't catch the name, so it was too quick. What was her name? Abigail. Abigail. Psalm 139 says of Abigail that she's fearfully and wonderfully made, knitted together in her mother's womb. Isn't that incredible? Same true for us. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. Wow. Isn't that stunning? What a stunning thing to consider on Mother's Day. That we're fearfully and wonderfully made. And it's in that that we find our identity. I need to come into land quickly. Your value is in who you are rather than what you do. Who you are rather than what you do. And sometimes it's not even who you think you are. Sometimes we think badly of ourselves. Sometimes it's true. Our value is in who God declares we are, who we're created to be. And we're created with purpose and value for such a time as this, fearfully and wonderfully made. Let me pray.